Hey, welcome back to another great episode of the Film Stage Show. I, of course, am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and this is the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. Joining us for the first time in like 2.5 to 3-ish weeks, Nick Newman, associate editor for the Film Stage. Nick, how you doing?
I'm good. I was here last week.
Yeah, but I mean like back in the studio.
Yeah, this is the first in-studio film I've reviewed since Prometheus, believe it or not.
Yes, well, you picked a great one to come back for. Everything else has been kind of light. I feel like this is another big one. I see you saving yourself for the big hitters.
Sure. Brave is not a big hitter, I can say that much.
You were not a fan of Brave?
No, it's a bad movie.
Jesus. Okay. Well, you should have been here to add some more dimension to our discussion. That being said, with us, as always, I can actually say that, Danny King, writer for the Film Stage. Danny, how you doing?
Good.
All right.
All right. Good.
Concise, to the point. Let's get going. For anyone who's just joining us, this is how our little show here plays out. We'll be doing a movie discussion topic related to current events in film. This week we'll be talking about the idea of reboots. When is it a good time to reboot? When is it not a good time to reboot? Have there been any successful reboots? That's about it. Then we'll launch into our main review, which this week will be The Amazing Spider-Man, though we will also talk briefly about Oliver Stone's new film, Savages. Then we'll give you our best bets for the week ahead. But before we begin any of that, I would like to say thank you very much, because we finally actually have a rating on iTunes. With 5 ratings in, we currently have 5 stars. So good work, gentlemen. The other thing I'd like to say is we actually have a comment as well. And, you know, I'm constantly telling you people to comment, and I appreciate that someone actually did. And so I want to give a shout out to Trashface, who gave us 5 stars and said, yes, smart dudes talking about movies. I love it. We love you too, Trashface.
Very cool.
Very cool. That's very great. Cool indeed. And again, don't forget to email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. And it doesn't just have to be in reaction to what we're talking about today. If you see a movie and you'd like us to bring something special up about it, can't guarantee that we'll do it, but you never know. So remember, podcast@thefilmstage.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. So that out of the way, all that little housekeeping, we can get into our movie news discussion today, which will be about reboots. We'll start off with our general feeling on reboots. Danny, why don't you get us started? What did you think when this whole reboot train got out of the station? What do you think are the criteria necessary for a series to have to be rebooted?
Well, I suppose one of the things that reboots afford filmmakers to do just in general is the chance to bring a new vision or a new take on a similar story that's been treated before. And just from like a film watching standpoint, that can be a really interesting potential to be able to kind of compare two films that have a lot of narrative connections, but potentially very different views behind the camera. But, you know, like a lot of the time, that vision can be kind of stifled by commercial needs or commercial drives. But then other times, the commercial drives and the artistic vision can kind of merge into this unified whole. We were talking before the recording about Nolan's Batman movies, which I think we all kind of regard as one of the top tier examples. But even just looking at them within the context of Burton's films, it's so interesting to just compare them and how different they are. And that's kind of one of the things that maybe the Mark Webb versus Sam Raimi the differences aren't as glaring. So it makes it a little bit less interesting at first. Yeah, that's kind of some of my thoughts.
All right, Nick, what about yourself? What do you think about reboots in general? And what do you think justifies a reboot best?
I think reboots are kind of a scary thing. It's a really easy way out for studios. If you screw up something, you can just say, well, we can just redo it. It'll be fine. Nobody will notice. Nobody will care. And you've seen this time and time and time again, but really to not great success, because I can't think of many successful reboots. There's obviously Batman Begins and Casino Royale. And then what else is there? Can any of you name successful reboots past those two?
Successful, not so much.
Right.
It's kind of a proto sequel, but The Incredible Hulk compared to Ang Lee's Hulk.
Right.
And I don't know. I liked Ang Lee's Hulk, so I can't really say if I thought it was absolutely necessary. But I think, you know, from a film standpoint, it did a decent job of rescuing the character for the Avengers.
Right. And I think that there is a reasoning behind reboots that makes... there is a reason to do them. And I think that the main one would have to be the franchise needs to have screwed up time, you know, just over and over again. You look at something like, again, Hulk, which I'm not a big fan of, but the reboot wasn't that great either, so whatever. But I think you need to have something that isn't working, and you need to, in turn, like Danny said, have an interesting take on it that will deviate, which maybe is a problem with the movie that we're about to discuss. But I think those are the two basic requirements, and it's funny how Hollywood just can't get that right. They keep screwing that up themselves.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the idea of reboots for me is kind of odd, especially when it comes to comic properties, because I feel like if anyone's used to this type of thing, it should be comic nerds. I can't even tell you how many times they just kind of retread the same, especially with origin stories, just going back and filling in details or changing things. For me, I think the most successful reboot, if not Batman Begins, then was James Bond, Casino Royale, I should say.
Sure.
And yeah, I mean, it is one of those things where you get to the point where you absolutely know that no one is going to go see another movie in those series, or that it's come to a point where the series has become kind of a joke, as Schumacher did, and as that happened with the later James Bond films.
Die Another Day.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
They did so well with GoldenEye. I don't know where the hell they went wrong. Or maybe I'm just letting my opinion of that film be influenced by the N64 game. But
perhaps. That is a great game.
That is. It's a fantastic game. Maybe that game needs a reboot, because I know all the other James Bond games on any kind of console have been shit. But yeah, I don't know. It's, for me, I never really have a problem seeing someone tell the same story. Like Danny said, as long as there's something interesting or new happening, or at least... See, once again, I think last week I said I just don't care about things that much. So I'm not the type of person who's like, you're ruining it, you're going back and you're destroying this, and you should just keep going with what we have. I mean, if someone comes up and they say they have an idea, or they say they want to do something new, I don't have an issue with that. We've seen basic archetypal stories so often that I feel like, you know, just coming back to a similar character, as long as it's not a Gus Van Sant beat for beat retreatment of Psycho, I don't think it's a problem. But I mean, again, that's kind of just me, because to me, these things, these properties that some people seem to care about so much, just don't have that much of a hold on me. I know that someone, I should have looked this up before this podcast, there was an article online that I saw get tweeted out that I didn't have the ability to read because I didn't want to, like, the idea of it scared me. There was someone saying, like, the 15 ways to reboot the Batman franchise, which to me seems like an odd choice, because I know that Nolan has this trilogy and that this is supposed to be the final film in it, but is that the type of thing where you really need a reboot? Because a reboot to me seems to suggest you're taking a character back to an origin, or you're, you know, gonna at least kind of retrofit the origin to fit a new story you want to tell. But with comic characters, or even James Bond, you know, who kind of runs in the same circles as comic characters, it seems to me, isn't it possible just to tell a new story with the same character without technically having to reboot the property?
Well, you'll have to probably restart with this Batman, because it seems like you might not make it to the end of this one, right?
Ooh, I mean, I kind of would actually love that. I know that I might be in a minority there. I think I once said that I wanted this new film, The Dark Knight Rises, to be like the Requiem for a Dream or Melancholia of superhero films.
Yes!
Because if you think about it, Batman Begins was a straight superhero film. Then The Dark Knight was kind of like the Heat of superhero films. So now we just need, like, our devastating, terrible, like, walk outside and slit your wrists version. But, yeah, I mean, I can understand, again, the need to reboot. But, like, at what point do you have to call something a reboot?
Yeah.
When you're starting over completely, which I imagine they'll do with Batman, or, like, they basically did with James Bond, even though for some reason Judi Dench is sticking around, which makes no sense. But
I mean, here's the question, especially in terms of James Bond. I mean, we do have reoccurring characters. Q, Judi Dench obviously is sticking around. These things make it so that you can't really view this as the same person each time.
Right.
I mean, they kept changing actors for Batman and for James Bond, and there was never a kind of, they never felt entirely tied to the previous film. Like, the serialization that has come up now, I think, may be the biggest reason that reboots are necessary.
Well, if you subscribe to the theory like I do that James Bond is actually multiple people,
oh yeah,
then it works.
I've heard that theory. I actually do enjoy that theory.
It's, that I
James
completely,
Bond is like a code.
Yeah, I completely believe it, because otherwise the series makes no sense at all. Unless he's a time-traveling, shape-shifting secret agent.
But see, that I guess that gets to the root of my issue. What I loved about the James Bond films was that you have the character of James Bond, and you have the idea of James Bond, and so you know who this character is and what they're capable of. But again, the idea of serialization, of things happening in one film and carrying over, never really mattered that much. So I could watch Goldfinger, and then The Spy Who Loved Me, and then From Russia with Love, and I never felt like, oh, I missed the other two movies, I need to see those, because I might be missing something.
Yeah, well, they're sort of going in a different direction with the new Daniel Craig Bond, wouldn't you say so?
They definitely are, and I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that, which, like I said, you know, I read a lot of detective fiction, the Philip Marlowe novels from the 40s and 50s, and... You know, you can read any one of those, and you know that Philip Marlowe's in it, you know that this character is there, and that's why you come to the novel, but you don't have to read them in any kind of sequence. So yeah, it's kind of like also, I guess, Sherlock Holmes. Like, why did we come to the point where we can't just have a character in a succession of stories that don't necessarily need to have serialization? Like, when did serialization become a problem? Because I think, more than anything, like I said, that's what's leading to this reboot influx. Like, the kind of comic book need for continuity has brought us to the point where we can't just take Batman and put him in a new situation. Like, it needs to somehow tie in with what came before.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting when you think about Nolan's Batman series, because it's not only a complete restart, but it's very contained. There's none of that Marvel-like crap where you have one character appear in one film, then they're in another, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, I enjoyed that. That doesn't happen.
There's no references to Metropolis or the Daily Planet or anything of that sort. They're very much their own films, and they exist in that three-film, 15-hour whatever world, because those movies are really long. That was the joke. You were supposed to laugh at that. But anyway, thank you. But yes, what I'm trying to say is that it also depends on what kind of movie you're doing, because like you say with James Bond, you can watch From Russia with Love, and then you can jump to Goldfinger, and then you can maybe go up to You Only Live Twice or Live and Let Die, and you're not going to miss anything. It's all going to be the same.
Right.
So I think if... It's easier to reboot a series like Bond, because you're really just replacing an actor and you're saying, oh, he's starting out as a 00, so he has to get a grip on things, and he has to, you know, he has to get used to using weapons and setting up context and such. But the basic stories can still be the same.
Right. But was it, I mean, I'm not the biggest Bond aficionado, but that was never an arc that he had to go through in the other movies,
no.
Correct? So, I mean, was it even necessary to reboot Bond, I guess I should say? Couldn't it have been just, hey, new Bond, and we're not going to do all that other ridiculous shit? Like, I mean, there's this sense that you kind of have to scorch the earth and start anew.
Mm-hmm.
But was it really that necessary?
Well, Casino Royale is one of my favorite action movies from the past 10 years, so I would say yes, it's necessary.
Okay. I can get behind that. I enjoyed Casino Royale, and it was interesting to see Bond, you know, kind of in a rough state. But
I also like Quantum of Solace, too. I'm one of the five people.
I enjoyed Quantum of Solace.
Okay.
So, six people, hooray. But yeah, I feel like if we had just, you know, cut out all the other Bond stuff and just made a new Bond where he wasn't newly minted, I feel like it could have been similar, if not, you know, just as good. But I mean, that's just me. I actually feel like I would prefer to get out of this idea of serialization, where if we can just stop this whole nonsense where it's like, hey, we're going to reboot it, because that really does kind of slap you in the face. And say, like, hey, everything that mattered before doesn't quite matter now.
Mm-hmm.
And get ready for the new thing. Like, I would be perfectly fine if they didn't reboot Batman so much as just saying, here is a Batman movie.
Yeah. And that, well, the nice thing about that, in a way, is it takes out the necessity of, like, retreading the origin story.
Precisely.
Because that's, like, even before I saw, like, The Amazing Spider-Man, just hearing about it, it's like, there's something that's going to be inherently limiting about it, because it's like, how interesting could that be?
Precisely.
To just see it again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's another thing.
Don't you think it's kind of hard to do that though, in this day and age where everything in a movie needs to be mapped out and explained and you need to know every last detail?
I mean,
you know what I mean? We live in a culture where
there is that kind of culture.
We live in a culture where there's the online prequel comic and there's the short films and such.
Yeah.
You can't just get a movie anymore.
And that's what I'm saying. I hate that. Like,
right. But I'm just saying that I think because of that culture, it would be very difficult to just make a Batman movie where he's been Batman for 5 years and he's going to fight Killer Croc or something.
Yeah. This will help us bleed into the discussion of Spider-Man, even though we're going to take a brief break to touch on Savages. But I went to visit my newly born niece this weekend, and I was hanging out with my 5-year-old nephew who recently got into Spider-Man, primarily because of The Amazing Spider-Man. And he made me sit down and watch the first half of a season of a Spider-Man cartoon called The Spectacular Spider-Man. And it starts off with like a 30-minute voiceover showing Spider-Man.
30-minute voiceover?
30-second voiceover.
Oh.
Yeah, that would have been awful. Jesus.
Is it just a black screen with the voice talking for 30 minutes?
Ooh, that's a dark, really complicated cartoon. But no, it's like a 30-second voiceover showing Spider-Man taking out some petty thug. And the voiceover explains that, like, he was bitten by a spider right before summer vacation. He spent the entire summer honing his spider skills. And, you know, obviously...
Right before summer vacation.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, because he's in high school in this, like, just like he is in The Amazing Spider-Man. But so he goes through that. You see him beat up a villain, and then he goes to school, and it turns out he's still a nerd because, you know, he's just still a screw-up. And I was like, that is basically the perfect way to start a new property like this. Like, everyone knows how Spider-Man became Spider-Man. You don't really need to go over that again. But like just Incredible. Yeah, just like The Incredible Hulk. And so I was actually impressed with The Spectacular Spider-Man that they were able to do that. My 5-year-old nephew did not appreciate that narrative techniques as much as I did, but he still loved the show. So that's a vague recommendation for that, I guess. And I guess that also just brings us towards the end of our discussion of reboots. Does anyone have anything else that they'd like to say on that before we move on?
I want to add this,
okay.
If I may.
No, absolutely.
Okay. I love Batman Begins. I think that you guys like it, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's great. But I do think it's maybe one of the worst things that's happened to Hollywood in this millennium, because it gave studios the idea that they can just reboot something if it doesn't work.
Right.
So if it wasn't for that movie, think about how different the Hollywood landscape would be today. I don't think people give that movie enough credit, or in my case, enough blame for when you look at how it's affected the modern blockbuster landscape, what have you.
Right. But that, so, in that case, I think that that actually was a necessary reboot.
I'm not saying it wasn't. It was right. Definitely a necessary reboot.
But
I'm glad
it has led to the lazier reboots that we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. The ensuing effect of it. It's
some works once, other people are going to make it work again.
I just wonder if the person at Warner Brothers who greenlit that project sits back in their chair and goes, what have I done?
Kind of like I have become death, the destroyer.
The guilt.
Kind of like Batman, because Batman, you know, inspires criminals and makes people crazy. That so it's sort meta, of a
very meta insider baseball type of thing to do.
Yeah.
That's a good point, though. I do like that. We should find that guy. Just ask him. He's probably got too much money to talk to us, though. But yeah, so moving on, before we get into a review of The Amazing Spider-Man, Danny, you saw Savages, the newest from, I was going to say Sylvester Stallone. That's the wrong name. The newest from Oliver Stone, who helped to write it, starring Taylor Kitsch, Aaron Johnson, and Blake Lively. What were your brief thoughts on this film? Because I know there are some people out there who probably want to know.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with Savages. It's pretty trashy, and if you kind of came out thinking it was all kind of stupid, I wouldn't really care to argue with you about it, but I just like the attitude that Stone brings with it. It's just kind of, from first frame to last, it's just kind of this like unhinged kind of tenacity that I fell for. And in Benicio del Toro and John Travolta, they're kind of like these mixed blessings in the film because they're so good in their supporting roles, but then they make the three main characters seem potentially very uninteresting. I had less of a problem with them than I think others would, but that's kind of one of the problems with the movie, is that whenever Blake Lively is giving a voiceover, you're kind of like, where is John Travolta or where is Benicio del Toro? Like, I just want to watch them. But I mean, it's kind of like a dumb fun kind of thing, but I had a blast with it.
I will agree with the dumb part. I went and saw this movie. I had vague, not high hopes, but I thought it would be interesting. I was looking for some like Natural Born Killers level craziness out of Stone. I can just tell you, anyone who's interested in seeing this movie with the idea of like two weed growers just going on a rampage to try to get the woman they love back, A, you won't believe that they love her because she sucks. B, like all the rampaging is in the trailer and the rest is just a bunch of boring people talking and saying things that don't matter.
It's a little, yeah, it's a little slow in the middle. I'll give you that.
I completely agree with you. I don't understand Blake Lively. I feel as though she should be dropped into a well.
She's very attractive.
Is she?
Sure.
I don't. Okay.
Let's go into this discussion.
Here's a brief experiment. You think Blake Lively is attractive? Do you also think that Amber Heard is attractive?
Yes.
Okay, because I found that most of the people I ask this question to have like a one or the other type of thing. If they think Blake Lively is attractive, they don't find Amber Heard attractive. If they find Amber Heard attractive, they don't think Blake Lively is attractive. I do not find Blake Lively to be attractive.
I don't understand the reasoning behind this at all.
I don't understand the reasoning behind it either. It's just an anecdotal thing that I wanted to check out. But you're already throwing off the curve. But no, Blake Lively to me, first of all, it doesn't matter if she's attractive or not. It matters if she's a good enough actress to make me believe anything that she's saying in her. I mean, it's a good thing she's a stoner in this film because her voiceover is so lifeless and so awful that I could at least say to myself, well, she's probably stoned at this point. Like, the second she talks and there's this awful line of dialogue, some of the writing in this movie is so bad, I don't think anyone could have rescued it. But she's describing Ben and Chon. Chon, whose name is C-H-O-N, which I could not get over the entire movie. But she's describing them because she's with both of them. Like, they're a polyamorous, not couple, like a triple couple. I don't know. I don't even know what words to use to describe this. But fine, you know, if these people are in love and they're willing to share one another, that's great. But she uses some phrasing along the lines of, like, Ben is, like, spirit and Chon is earth, and I like wanted to get up and walk out of the theater. It made me absolutely furious, and she did nothing to help me through that line of dialogue. So yeah, Savages, like, I didn't care about anyone in that movie. Like you said, Benicio del Toro, John Travolta were cool, way underused, and I wasn't supposed to care about them as much as I was supposed to care about this romantic triumvirate, and I just didn't. Like, every time that they were like struggling to get her back, I was just like, guys, you are young, rich, attractive young men. Just go out and find someone else. Like, she's not worth the trouble, which I blame on the writing and the casting.
I will say that I think Taylor Kitsch is actually well cast.
Yes.
I kind of liked him, this tough guy kind of thing.
Well, that's the thing. Aaron Johnson and Taylor Kitsch are great in the movie, but the weak leg in that stool of acting causes the entire thing to collapse. Like, Blake Lively basically murdered this movie for me.
Wow.
But I mean, I didn't find the direction that great, and like you said, it lags to the point where I was just like, I could feel it every minute of that movie. I could feel, and the voiceover did nothing for me. Nick, you did not see this movie, correct?
No, I would have liked to, but I was marooned for the week. I'll probably see it.
It would have been a good family vacation flick, I think.
Yeah, no, take the family.
I almost went to see it. I came very close, and then that would have been too fun, so.
You didn't want to ruin the time you were having.
Yeah.
If you do see it, I entreat you to let us know next week what you thought of it.
Yeah, I'll probably see it sometime next week.
Okay, great. So you can tune in next week to find Nick's opinions on it. Obviously, Danny and I have a slight disagreement here, to put it mildly. But not much else to say about that. We don't want to get into spoilers, even though, you know, it shouldn't matter because you shouldn't see this movie. And I will say that the last 5 minutes of this movie, any goodwill I had drained like blood out of a pig hung upside down with its throat slit.
I've been told what happens at the end, and
what's going on, Stone?
I can't imagine how that would work, and apparently it just doesn't.
It doesn't work because it's precisely like, it's just a fuck you moment to the audience. Like, they couldn't decide on an ending, and they couldn't decide how to have, like, a mishmash of the two endings. So they just said, well, let's just film them both and then have shitty dialogue to bridge it.
Oliver Stone's a renegade.
He told the editor to not do that, but the editor forgot, so that's what happened. I'm making that up, okay?
I was about to say, that's... yeah, can you just cut out this 10-minute sequence? Don't leave it in. Oh, shit, it's still in there. But yeah, that out of the way... Now we can actually get into our primary review, which this week will be of The Amazing Spider-Man, starring Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, and some other people, directed by Mark Webb.
How did you get out there?
A fire escape.
It's 20 stories.
Your doorman's intimidating.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Parker.
Not much to tell, really.
Peter lives with his aunt and uncle. Did you catch that spider guy yet?
No, but we will. This guy wears a mask like an outlaw.
I think he's trying to do something maybe the police can't.
Can't?
You know, if you're gonna steal cars, don't dress like a car thief.
You a cop?
You seriously think I'm a cop? In a skin tie, red and blue suit.
Who are you?
So, yes, that was from the trailer for The Amazing Spider-Man, which some of the other people I failed to mention. Reese Iffens, Dennis Leary, Martin Sheen, Sally Field, and Campbell Scott, who I love seeing him. Love seeing him
in movies.
Campbell
Scott's not in this movie.
Campbell Scott is in this movie for just as long as Liam Neeson was in Battleship. And they both got just as much play in the trailers, and both had actually just as much effect on the plot.
Yeah, and probably as much as Liam Neeson will be in The Dark Knight Rises. Little elbow nudge.
I feel like The Dark Knight Rises is infecting every single discussion we could possibly have. Like,
it's hard to discuss this movie when it's coming out in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah. It's true. Watch, we're going to get to the podcast for The Dark Knight Rises, and it's just going to be like, yeah, it's pretty
we'll
good.
We'll just have nothing to say.
Yeah, we'll have said everything. But yeah, Campbell Scott, love that guy. So glad to see him in a film again. We can we already talked about the reboot thing. I think we can all agree on some basic tenets of that. So let's give our brief introductory thoughts to this film and say whether or not you felt that this movie, completely separate from your opinion of it as a whole, if possible, whether or not you thought this movie was a successful reboot or if it was just kind of like, meh, it doesn't matter. Nick, you start us off.
As I said before the recording, I saw this movie exactly 1 month ago, so my memory of it might be a little hazy at times. Just for context, I saw this before we recorded our review of Prometheus, so the film was already in my brain then. And then, you know, I got wined and dined by Sony Studios the next day. It was luxurious. Anyway, that doesn't affect my opinion at all. But yeah, no, I mostly like the movie. I do think it's a bit disjointed and a little sloppy at times. I'll get to that more in a second. But yeah, it was a fun time. I thought it was, the two leads have great chemistry, but you know, they're very magnetic and energetic and very pretty as well, which always helps. And I thought the supporting cast was actually pretty strong too, which you don't normally expect from a movie like this. Even though the actors aren't given the best dialogue or maybe the most interesting characters to work with, they're still fun to watch. I'd like a movie where Martin Sheen and Sally Field play an old couple who live in Queens. Could somebody make that movie? That'd be good. And I would also say that Reese Fons is sort of a weird element of this film. He feels maybe a little out of place, almost because maybe he's playing it a little too seriously, is a vibe I got, because it's kind of a dumb, it's a dumb character, screw kind of, it's a really stupid character, but it's a giant lizard, for Christ's sake. But anyway, I liked it, and I thought the action scenes were fun. There's a lot of foop and foop and foop, the sounds that the shooters make.
I agree with that. Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
It's a good way to describe
and,
it.
And nice 3D, too. I thought the 3D was not bad. It was never intrusive. We're at that point with 3D. It did not affect the experience negatively. Therefore, it's good.
I was going to say, until you just said that, I completely forgot that I saw this in 3D, which to me is the mark of good 3D.
Yeah,
oddly.
which is sad. So there's more to say, but those are my basic thoughts. It's a fun little time.
All right, and Danny, what about yourself?
I'm a bit more split. I think that, like, I agree with Nick that kind of the Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone scenes are kind of maybe the best in the movie. And I think for the first 80 or 90 minutes, I was going with this. And, you know, there were some parts where Reese Fons was kind of turning into a lizard, and I could have rolled my eyes, but I didn't, because I think it was just done pretty well. But then kind of like the last 40 minutes for me was just kind of one uninteresting climax where nothing really happened. And that kind of was a little bit disappointing. Not that I was expecting like some epic climax, because like Nick said, the lizard character isn't all that interesting, but really the last 30 or 40 minutes, I was just kind of like a bunch of nothing to me. And yeah.
A bunch of nothing.
I mean, yeah.
I disagree with that final assessment.
A pocket full of air.
I'm going to say something right now that's probably going to piss off a lot of people. I had more fun at this movie, and it has remained more positive in my mind than the Avengers did.
I would say the same. Hey,
yeah.
Holy crap. Okay, so, sweet. If you didn't hate us for mocking the Avengers, which we all still said you should go see, you're going to hate us now because we like this more. Yeah, no, I thought that the Andrew Garfield was great. I've always viewed Spider-Man as a very slight figure. Does that make sense? Like a tiny guy?
Maybe you mean physically?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, you know, like lithe, I guess.
Yeah.
Tobey Maguire was like kind of buff. I know this is like the weirdest thing to like say about a movie, but I thought the casting of Spider-Man was good. He's tiny. He's thin. Like he doesn't.
He's tall, though.
He is tall. Lanky, perhaps. Is he tall?
In person, he's tall. I can say that much.
I don't know. In the movie, I didn't get the sense that he was much taller than anyone else. But I mean, like, he is getting pounded by a guy who's, like, probably a foot taller than him. Another thing I liked, actually, was the interplay between him and the jock, Flash Thompson. I thought that they actually, that was actually integrated into this movie a little better than in the first Spider-Man. They kind of humanized him a little more.
Well, in the first Spider-Man, he just punches a locker, and that's kind of it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I appreciated that. The chemistry between him and Stone was great. The action in this movie, again, I'll say I kind of liked it more than the first film, or even possibly any more than the subsequent films. This is the first Spider-Man movie where I felt like he actually defeated someone by physically defeating them, if you know what I mean. In like, we can get more into it in spoilers, but in like the first and second movie, at least, because I remember those better, of Raimi's trilogy, really it's just like he convinces Octopus to like stop being a bad guy, and in the first film he just jumps out of the way of a jet bike with some knives on it. But I mean, like, this is the first movie where I felt like he was actually utilizing all of his powers as a means of overcoming a situation through like cleverness and actual use of power. So I appreciated that. I liked it. I thought it helped the character immensely because it actually made me feel like he was capable of doing things instead of just standing around and being an idiot. I liked the lack of goofy pratfalls. That was always something that bugged me about Raimi's trilogy. I mean, I'm not gonna bag on Raimi's trilogy. It's fun. It started a trend of kind of counterbalancing the grimness of the Batman series. But I mean, I don't know. I enjoyed this film. I do have some qualms with the Lizard. It's a character that I've liked in its other iterations, but this movie kind of mishandles it. And I mean, I know there are some dropped plot threads, and I know that there's this kind of sense of consumerism about it. Like, people seem to be giving it shit just because it's like, well, this is only a way for Sony to keep the rights to Spider-Man and blah blah blah. It's like, well, you know what, every movie's made to make money, so I just didn't bother me as much. So yeah, I'm generally happy about it. I feel like I'm already getting into a defensive stance because I know people are gonna disagree with me. But yeah, I mean, it's a Spider-Man movie, and it was just as fun as the other ones, but I felt that it executed some things better. Did I like this more than the other Spider-Man? Here's a question. This is a good thing to bring up before we jump into spoilers. How would you rank this against the other Spider films? Or do you feel that it is so different that it's unfair to rank it as such?
No, it's perfectly fair to rank it.
Okay. So if you had to choose where this would fit amongst the others, where would you place it?
I would say second to last. I mean, I know that sounds bad, but, you know, even Spider-Man 3 I don't hate. I think it's not a good movie, but it has these moments to it.
Let's get this straight here.
Yeah. So, second to last. I think the first is my favorite, and then the second is not far behind. I know that's kind of the opposite of how most people feel, but...
Yeah, I feel like whatever. Most people feel like 2-1-3 was probably how they would rank it.
So for me, it's 1-2-3. But, I love Spider-Man 2, don't get me wrong. I just think that Raimi Spider-Man is, maybe this is an unfair thing the movie has to go against, but I think Raimi Spider-Man is one of the best blockbusters maybe ever. I honestly feel that way. So,
well, all right. Danny, how would you stack these up against each other?
I'd say the second is my favorite. Third would be the least favorite. I'd put Raimi's movie above this one just because I think Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin is like a really effective villain and the Lizard isn't. So I think that's kind of like a simple way to separate them, because I mean, I think the origin beats are handled nicely in both films, and I don't think there's anything really that radically separates them in that respect, except maybe that Mark Webb's movie kind of starts off with that flashback. But yeah, I'd say three, then Raimi's, then Webb's, and then, or no, two, and then Raimi's, and then Webb's, and then three.
Okay, I would probably go Spider-Man 2, Amazing Spider-Man 1, and then 3. So, I don't know. So I mean, like, it's weird.
We're all different.
Yeah, we all are different. So I obviously probably like this the most. And it's weird because I've read thousands, seemingly, of arguments that tell me why this movie sucks and why I should hate it. And I can't get behind it. I just I don't understand the ire. I don't understand the vitriol.
Yeah.
And it just seems odd to me. And actually, that's a great way for us to get into spoilers. Since all of us are vaguely positive on it, obviously we're going to talk about some drawbacks. But I would like to bring up, as we talk about spoilers, some of the things that other people have said. And whether or not you think those are fair assessments, whether or not you think they're actually as damaging to the film as these people said about them, and whether or not you care. Because some of them I just don't care. So there's always that problem. I'm not going to, like, point out any names. This isn't quite a straw man argument, but I'm also just not going to cite anyone because that would take forever. So yeah, spoilers. I think we can all agree that the lizard is a little bit of a problem. I mean, let's be real here.
Yeah.
The guy seems pretty good. He's a nice guy to begin with. Obviously, he's got some shadows in his past, but I mean, it almost is a superhero origin story for him because he's plotting to, you know, try to regrow his own arm back and only tries to inject himself when he needs to stop someone else from trying to do it at the VA hospital.
Yeah, that was actually, just to branch off quickly, I thought that was like the funniest line in the movie because he's talking with, I think the actor's like Irfan Khan.
Yes.
And, you know, they're talking about how the thing is like deadly. Irfan Khan's like, next stop, Veterans Hospital.
Yeah.
And I thought he was kidding. And then a few scenes later, he's in a cab and he's like, take me to Veterans Hospital. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah. Like, that is the most overtly evil thing I feel that could have happened in this movie.
He was ruthless.
Yeah. The guy is a great, like he said that. I was like, seriously? Jesus.
Like, dude, leave the hospital alone.
You couldn't literally find anyone else. They do say, like, apparently Norman Osborn, I think, is dying and they need something to help him. So it's just kind of weird, though. That's a really big jump. So it was like he was the real villain. And then Dr. Kurt Connors injects himself. He's like, oh, shit, it works. This guy doesn't have to go poison a bunch of veterans. And then when he finds out that he can't, he jumps into a cab and then turns into the lizard. Still going after the guy who wants to kill all the veterans. Still a nice guy. But then, like, a scene later, he suddenly wants to poison all of New York to make everyone lizards. Is there anyone here right now who can tell me why he made that leap of logic? Like, what drove him to that decision?
If at first you don't succeed, try again.
I guess. It's also just one of those things where, like, I mean, this is a problem all comic book movies have. It's like, oh, hey, there's that big piece of science that could possibly hurt a lot of people. You know it's going to come back. Though, I don't know why.
Hidden behind glass, we have this device.
Yeah.
That, if it were unleashed, could.
It's still in perfect operating order. It still gets a regular tune-up, still plugged in.
Looks very clean, too.
Yeah, yeah. They get someone to go in there and dust it. It's just, I mean, it's one of those things. I know that's kind of a stupid thing to happen in a movie, but I kind of gotten used to it, especially in superhero movies. So, I mean, like, it's weird to me because I know that the lizard suddenly turning from, like, a seemingly okay guy into a genocidal maniac without much of a reason behind it should annoy me more than it does. But I, for some reason, I'm just like, well, he's already turned into a lizard. Like, why does his motivation matter? He's just nuts now.
He's going to have some poor decision making when he's a lizard.
Another thing, and this is a very personal thing, I love reptiles. I've, you know, studied them as an amateur all my life, and I own a couple now. So it's just weird to me. People are always like, lizards can regenerate limbs. It's like, well, they can regenerate their tail, some of them. And the tail that comes back is always, like, infinitely weaker than the tail that was there originally. And they only separate it when they're in danger. So, I mean, like, just the idea that, like, he gets riddled with bullets or gets his arm cut off and it just grows back immediately and is, like, just as strong as the other one bugs me. But again, I mean, it's a comic hero super book. comic
yeah.
hero. Yeah. It's just that kind of movie. Like, you get over things like that. Did anyone else feel any real drawbacks in this movie outside of, as we've already discussed, the lizard's oddity?
Well, he's not even a fully rendered character, it seems like.
Are you talking about...
I mean, in terms of the actual effect, he does not look like a complete character, which was bothersome. He looked really dumb, is what I'm trying to say.
I will agree that the design was not great, and in some instances he didn't look as well rendered. But I mean, here's the thing. This is the same problem I kind of had with most of the Avengers. You know what I'm saying? Like, those lizard people were like, they're okay. But I mean, a lot of to me, that same... But yeah. I mean, again, I pinged the Avengers for it. I'm pinging this movie for it. But I feel like this movie had something to it that allowed me to look beyond it more than I did for the Avengers.
Okay, then I'll ask, what do you guys think about this being such a similar story to the original Spider-Man? Were you guys particularly bothered by that?
I was expecting it, so I don't know if I was bothered. It was almost having, like, minimal fun kind of picking out where it differed a little bit, like where he's 2 cents short on the chocolate milk and the guy's not going to give it to him, and that's how, you know, so and so ends up getting killed, as opposed to how
Uncle Ben.
Yeah. So-and-so.
We're in spoilers.
That son of a bitch. I mean, I don't think it's spoilers. Like, is it?
Yeah, I guess. Well, I guess
spoilers
not,
for then. Man of Steel, Krypton gets destroyed.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't even really, like, give the synopsis rundown of this movie, because it's like, he becomes Spider-Man. Like, people know. No, I mean, yeah, I appreciated things like that, the differences. And I think that they still work. For some reason, a lot of people were saying that the change... of the manner in which Uncle Ben is killed somehow decreased their enjoyment of the film.
That's weird.
Like, because they're like, you know, I guess it wasn't obvious enough that Peter could have stopped this guy and he chose not to. Like, it's the exact same thing. It's just not at a luchador wrestling palace. I mean, it felt, and I think people are rebelling a little bit against this, like, grittying up of comic properties. But I didn't have an issue with it.
I didn't think it was that gritty, did you?
I didn't think it was that gritty either. Like, he's still kind of a goofy, mumbly kid. He's just a little more real. And I think
it's a well-lit movie.
Yeah.
And that's also movie. In the performance, too,
yeah.
I think.
But what I was going to say is that it was weird for me because I was, you know, one of the first people in the world to see this movie, so I had
rub it in.
But what I'm saying is that I had no reviews to go off of or advanced word or anything like that. So I remember sitting in the theater and just being a little confused as to why there was no quote-unquote untold story.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? And then, of course, there's that article on Badass Digest, which goes into really great detail about how they cut out all of that stuff.
Yes.
Which I think would have made for a much more interesting film, if only because it would have been different. I don't know if it would have been better, because some of it sounds kind of dumb, but it would have been neat to get a different spin on Spider-Man. And you are basically just getting the story from the... Well, the first hour is basically just the story from the first movie.
Right.
There's even the love interest who's at the science exhibition and that kind of...
In the first movie, weren't they just at a museum or something?
Yeah. But I'm saying, like, they might have changed the lyrics a little, but the music is the same.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It was one of those things where I guess I was enjoying looking at... the changes that have been made. I was enjoying picking out where they made differences and trying to understand why they may have made those differences. I was hoping that the untold story would come into it more with the parents, and I'm a little disappointed that they're seemingly setting that up as like a through line for the series.
Especially because it was marketed, so in the last trailer that was like, there were 4 or 5 lines where he's like, what happened with my parents?
Yeah.
And that's like, that's barely in the movie.
It is barely in the movie.
Mm-hmm. So that was kind of weird.
It is weird. Here's, I mean, and in the original movie, he actually catches the dude who aced his uncle until it gets retconned in the third movie. Did you have a problem with the idea of him giving up the hunt?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, because it makes him lazy.
It makes him lazy. But I mean, okay, see, I knew this was going to be a problem at some
point. Yeah, my uncle's dead, whatever.
Well, his uncle's dead, but I mean, he gets the talking to by Dennis Leary, who says something like, you know, he's just going up beating up people. He's not really serving the public good. He's just serving himself. Possibly paraphrased. I mean, I thought the concept of him still having the wanted poster on his corkboard, but actually dedicating himself to helping in a greater sense was a little better. You know what I mean?
You know, in the second one, he'll catch him or something, and then it'll be he was involved with Oscorp and the.
I pray to God they don't do that. Not everything has to be connected. Like, New York's a big city. Like, some shit is just random. Okay. Like, but yeah, here's another thing. So we've already talked about the villain. We've already talked about Peter Parker's uncle thing. Did you feel like there's been a lot of weird criticism about this movie, like trying to quote unquote Twilight the Spider-Man franchise? I guess.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so? Because I found that very reductive.
I was about to say it's reductive. Yeah.
It seems like, you know, the idea that anything that, first of all, it's kind of chauvinistic bullshit to say that an increased romance is purely made to, quote unquote, attract women and appeal to girls. Like, that's kind of messed up. But also, just because that may or may not be happening doesn't mean that it's Twilight. And just because a character has messy hair doesn't mean it's Twilight. I've heard three different people talk about his eyebrows. And I swear to God, if you can notice things like that, if you pay enough attention, yeah, then you have other issues to worry about. Did anyone have an issue with this kind of... I mean, he wasn't even that brooding. Like, in the trailers, it seemed like he was going to be a hardcore emo kid. I actually felt like they modulated his issues regarding his parents' abandonment and everything very well. It wasn't played up as like, you know, oh, he's a... Not having seen Twilight, I can't really understand. But it seems like everyone's like, oh, he's a handsome, brooding guy who's, like, rejecting people.
No, that's not him at all.
No, it's not.
He's just an angsty teen.
Yeah. I felt like that worked really well. And he wasn't even trying to turn this woman away until her dying father asked him to.
And it's really weird how some people are complaining about the romance, because that's easily the best part of the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not even close. It's easily the best part of the film. And I was enjoying it the most during those scenes. Some of those scenes are really kind of terrific, where they're just bouncing off the lines and they've got the subtle glances, you know. That was fun.
Yeah.
Right? It was more fun than watching him fight a CG reptile.
I did, however, have fun in the CG reptile fight in the school.
I'm not saying you can't have fun with that, but I think the high school scenes are easily the best part of this entire film.
Yes, I agree.
And so,
and it makes sense because Mark Webb did come from 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah, but that movie's not good.
Oh, well,
but
I like that movie.
Jesus, Nick.
That's not a good credential. Not that his direction in the movie's bad, but anyway. Yeah, I thought those were easily the best moments of the film, and I think anybody who is... not going to see this because there's too much romance. Like you said, they've got other things to sort out.
Yeah, like this idea, like, you know, this is a boy's property, like, keep your shitty romance for the girls. Like, really? Is that what you're going for?
Is it a boy's property? I mean, I guess it's a child's property, but not a...
Again, not being, like, the biggest Spider fan, I just don't know.
Like girls can enjoy it, though.
Yeah.
Just fine.
I feel like girls can enjoy anything boys can enjoy because fucking gender shouldn't play into it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see the world in that way. I know a lot of people say that, but I don't, and I get in trouble for it because someone will claim almost, it's weird. I've been accused of being sexist for not being able to see things purely delineated between four men and four women, if that makes any sense to you. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. Like, when I go see a movie, someone will give me shit because it's like, that movie is produced purely for men to, like, you know, capitalize on their most base instincts. I'm like, what? Like, I went with a woman and she enjoyed it, and I saw other women enjoying it. I don't understand why you're saying that. And then they just quote some theory to me. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand how we can try to draw these distinctions. And I don't think that an increased romance in this movie, a romance that feels a lot more real than the romance between Spider-Man and Mary Jane in the first or even second films.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't understand people taking issue with that.
Different strokes.
Different strokes for different folks.
I honestly don't know what else to say other than fun to watch. That's all.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. And I wish we had someone on this podcast who hated this movie as much as some other people seem to hate it. But I mean, I feel like we've talked about as much as we can about it. Like I said, I thought the combat was good. There are things in this movie, like the thing that springs to mind most is him, like, being on the floor and shooting his webs and then just zipping across the floor that way. Like, I don't think I've seen that in any other of the movies. Like, it just felt new and fresh to me. Like, this is a take on the character that, for the first time, really feels like it's taking advantage of all of the spider abilities. It's so odd to be talking about this seriously. And I enjoyed it. Like, I thought that the action was well choreographed, and I thought that the scene with Stan Lee was actually one of not only his best cameos because it didn't involve him saying anything. Also, it was like an excellent use of the 3D. Like, it was the one point where I realized that the 3D was actually helping out the scene.
Mm. Yeah, that was a cool moment.
Yeah. Can we talk briefly about the editing in this film and how bad it is? Did anybody else notice that just the basic foundations of The Amazing Experiment's editing are, like, terrible?
I did not. Except maybe sometimes when they cut to the POV shots.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean the way shots cut together. There's one moment when you first see Captain Stacy in person, and he's walking and talking with a guy, and visually it's completely incoherent. Did anybody else have this problem? Or...
I don't think I did.
Or, like, there are moments where...
You remember this from a month ago. I saw this movie less than a week ago.
Right, because it sticks out. Or there are moments where the sort of the temporal geography of moments is completely weird. Like, Uncle Ben gets shot, and Peter's walking for, like, 2 seconds. And then
I do
he just turns
that,
around
yeah.
and notices. And I was thinking to myself, okay, if you're walking down the street and you hear a gunshot, you do two things in a split second. You look behind you, and you run.
Yes.
You don't keep walking for 2 seconds and think, hey... Maybe something's going on.
I will say that I do know what you're talking about with the Uncle Ben thing.
Yeah.
So, in that instance, I can agree with you.
Just, I don't know what happens on that level. It was a big drawback for me. I don't know why.
I don't know.
It was really weird. I would have to go back and point out specific things, but in my head, it just was not computing. Because normally when I watch a film, and if the editing is just fine, then I don't really pay it much mind. But if it's not working, it's gonna...
That's actually a problem I had in The Savages.
It'd stick out.
There were scenes where you'd see two people talking and a character would very clearly be behind them. Mm-hmm. And then it would cut to a mid-range shot and suddenly they'd all be in a row.
Yeah, but you have to respect that.
Yeah. Oliver Stone, man, he's an unconventional artist.
You really just gotta bow down.
It's chaos cinema.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I was like, I know that if I bring that up, someone's gonna be like, it's Oliver Stone, man. He's manic fiend. Fuck that. No. But yeah. So aside from but I mean, that's weird because, you know, you bring that up and in some movies that could be like a killer, but for some reason there's like an X factor to this film where like I am either willfully like giving it a pass on these things or I didn't even notice them because I was having so much fun with all the other stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. That's basically how I felt. I feel like the bright moments outshine the negative aspects enough for me to give this movie a fair grade.
So, final question in order to wrap up. Would you go see a sequel if you weren't forced to for this podcast? And are you excited at the prospect of seeing the sequel?
Does Danny want to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would be naturally more interested in a sequel just because it's where it could potentially divert the most. So even just regardless of what I think about the first movie, I'd kind of be interested to see if Mark Webb comes back, kind of what he ends up doing with it.
Sure. I feel I have the same reaction, basically. If this is an opportunity for them to spread their wings a little and get out there and try something different with the character, because there is too much of the original movie in here,
right?
Referring to Raimi's film. But yeah, I would see a follow-up, especially if they can emphasize the relationship between Peter and Gwen more. I would love to see more of that. And maybe learn from the mistakes of the first, but I don't necessarily expect them to do that either.
Well,
that's
I'm
way too optimistic.
I'm more excited, and this might just be because I'm older and I have more interest in film now. I'm more excited for the sequel to this film than I was to the sequel of the original. Controversy. And I don't know. Like, I think I agree. I think there were enough good things in this that were different from the first that I hope that, like you said, Nick, they will... Well, like we all said, that they'll divert more and just be able to accentuate those things and possibly fix the other issues that are coming up. Just a brief production note. If anyone hears any rumbling, that's because there's currently an apocalyptic storm brewing in the D.C. area. And I can't do anything...
There's also a lawnmower outside my window. I just noticed that.
Haven't heard that, but it's possible that we may get some occasional booms and crashes. Just think of that as adding to the excitement that is the film stage show. So that being said, I think we can all agree you should see The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know, maybe a matinee,
yeah.
I would say. I don't know if I'd spring 13.50 for a 3D. Well, no, because if you're paying for an evening 3D show,
it's
going to run you.
So you're saying go see a matinee and see it in 3D.
Sure.
Okay. Even at 8 or 9 a.m., I would try to sneak
don't
in.
Do that. Who goes? I don't want to know who goes to those showings.
I have no idea. I did go to a 10 a.m. of Magic Mike.
Oh, that sounds fun.
I went to the gym. I went to the farmer's market, and I was already next to the theater. And then we had to record at 1, so it made sense. All right, so getting into what's coming out this coming week. DVDs on Tuesday. Looking at DVDsReleaseDates.com, we have American Reunion, the 5th, 6th sequel to American Pie. I don't even know anymore. And then they have sidequels to that, too, which is an awful word. The Flowers of War, starring Christian Bale. Being Flynn, with Robert De Niro and Paul Dano. On Thin Ice, which I've never heard of. Margaret, which is the movie that it's gotten more people have probably read about this movie than who've seen it.
Yeah.
That being said, I would like to be one of those people who've seen it because of everything that I've read about it. So I will probably be checking out Margaret. And Being Flynn looked like it could be good, but it could just be the fact that there's a Fleet Foxes song in the trailer. So those are probably my picks. Flowers of War looked okay. But Danny, Nick, what do you think are your best picks for DVD releases?
Well, yeah, I'm going to try to get my hands on the extended cut of Margaret ASAP, because I think it's about a half hour longer than the theatrical cut. And the theatrical cut itself was one of my favorite movies of last year. So high on my list.
Both of them are on the DVD, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, I think they're in tandem.
Excellent.
And then I saw Being Flynn, and I liked it. Kind of a simple, kind of nice story with a couple of good performances. So excellent. I would recommend that, too.
Sweet. And Nick, what about yourself?
Yeah, a pretty bad week, all things considered. But I did like Margaret as well. I actually saw it twice, which makes me kind of an anomaly because most people have never even heard of that film. And the second time, it was actually with Danny. Remember that?
Very, very fun viewing experience.
Yeah, it is a fun movie. And but yeah, otherwise, it's kind of a Spawn, the director's cut. It's coming out. I see.
Sweet.
I didn't know that. And Chariots of Fire is going to be on Blu-ray. Never
very
seen that film. It looks like Universal Warner Brothers is doing some Blu-ray upgrading this week. Frequency, that's a good movie. Did you ever see that?
Is that the one with
Dennis
Jim
Quaid?
Diesel?
Yeah, I actually like that.
I actually did like Frequency. Yeah,
it's a fun movie. But in terms of what's coming out this week, the only thing I can really recommend is Margaret, because I didn't see American Reunion, nor will I ever. So
okay,
as long as you're out.
Yeah, and I would like to see the extended cut because I read the Margaret, not American Reunion, because I did read the script for Margaret, and there is a lot of small interstitial stuff that was cut that I think would help add atmosphere and mood, and then there's some very big stuff that was removed as well that apparently was shot and is in this new cut. So
excellent.
I'm looking forward to seeing that.
All right, well, coming to theaters, we have Ice Age Continental Drift, and that's really the only wide release. In limited release, we have Easy Money, Red Lights, The Imposter. We next week will be talking about a film that's gotten a lot of good buzz, Beasts of the Southern Wild. I have seen it. I can say that you should go see it if it's in one of the theaters near you. It's probably expanding this coming week. Anyone else have any recommendations for theater watching?
Again, rough week.
Rough week.
Just
yeah, I've heard good things about The Imposter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've heard that's good. But you've got Ice Age, which I've another Dennis Leary movie. It's kind of weird. No interest in that. Red Lights, I've heard I won't say mixed things. I've heard mostly bad things. Mixed in the sense some people say it's okay. And Easy Money, but also known as Snabbacash, is presented by Martin Scorsese, which is odd. But I still don't have any interest in it, really.
All right. Yeah.
Snabbacash.
I'd go see it if it was still called Snabbacash.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to tell you that you should all go out and see Beasts of the Southern Wild so you can listen to us talk about it next week, because that is what we will be talking about next week when we return. But yeah, before we go, just very quickly, since we're kind of running a little long today, why don't we give our random recommendations of things that we've seen in this past week that aren't in theaters and aren't new to DVD that we feel that you should check out. So I don't know who should go first.
Newman, because his recommendation last week was poor. It wasn't on DVD.
Well, hopefully his Word document open this week.
Give me 2 seconds to load my Word document. hey, come on. I had a million things. I was about to go to one of my best friend's weddings. So, come on.
Is that your recommendation? My best friend's wedding?
Yes, starring Julia Roberts and Dermot Mulroney or some
some anonymous slab. Anyway, in terms of what I watched this week, I watched a lot of good stuff, especially yesterday when I was having a hellish day of travel. Watched like several movies because it was a long trip. Among those, I'm going to recommend The Tenant, directed by Roman Polanski, which I had never seen before. Has anybody here seen it?
This is like the fourth Roman Polanski film.
Yeah, it is. Wow, how about that?
Jesus. Okay. I have not seen that one, though. No.
I'm going to be careful with what I say here. It's at least my second favorite movie I've seen from him. At least.
All right.
So Chinatown better look out, because this might supplant it.
Is that a joke?
No, I'm being completely serious.
Dude, good joke.
It's a great film. I'm not kidding. It's absolutely fantastic. It's actually the third installment of his quote-unquote apartment trilogy. Started with Repulsion, continued with Rosemary's Baby, ends with this. It's, you know, just people in apartments going crazy.
Doesn't he have his newest one, Carnage? Would that be the fourth? Is this a quadrilogy now?
Sort of.
I haven't seen Carnage. I just know that from the trailer, it looked like they never leave that damn apartment.
These are much darker, though.
Okay. So. All right, Danny, what about yourself?
I watched In the Cut, which...
Oh, is that the one with Robin Williams? No,
it's with Meg Ryan, Mark Ruffalo. It was directed by Jane Campion and from 2003, and it kind of got panned, and I never saw it, but I actually really liked it. What made it kind of cool was I saw it maybe 2 or 3 days after I rewatched When Harry Met Sally, and it's like a totally against type performance for Meg Ryan, and that's really like the main reason to see the movie. She's
Not irritating.
She actually is, I guess, because she's very ambiguous. You can't pin her down.
I've heard it's a really pin her down in the film.
It's very erotic.
Anybody? Sure.
But I would recommend it. I think it's probably something that will kind of gain in stature if it hasn't already, because it really doesn't. It's too well made to like just pan.
Yeah, because I remember hearing awful things about that.
Yeah, it's not awful.
That's the best recommendation. This is not an awful movie. My recommendation will be a movie called California, spelled with a K, directed by Dominic Sena. I don't know.
Great director.
Great director. Yeah, his recent stuff has been pretty dire. He was responsible for Season of the Witch, Whiteout, Swordfish, Gone in 60 Seconds. But I should not have told you any of that, because California is actually a pretty damn good film. It stars David Duchovny, Michelle Forbes, Brad Pitt, and Juliette Lewis. It's about one guy is writing a book on serial killers, and his girlfriend is helping him with photography for the book, and they're doing a ride share across the country with Brad Pitt and Juliette Lewis, who are kind of a rednecky couple, and Brad Pitt's a complete and utter psychopath. But it comes out very slowly. It's a well-made film. Interesting to see these people looking so young, which is always a little jarring at first. But yeah, strong performances, interesting plot, I guess. Interesting concept for a film. Yeah, it's pretty damn good. I enjoyed it. You should check it out to see these people before they became the massive stars they are now, and before Dominic Sena decided to destroy everything.
Before that one person became a massive star.
Okay, well, see, I watch a lot of television, so to me, David Duchovny and Michelle Forbes are still stars.
I thought you were going to say, I watch a lot of David Duchovny films.
Jesus. Not so much. I go back to Beethoven every now and then. No one remembers that he was in that movie.
I've never seen that movie.
Oh. The one with the big dog? Did you have a childhood?
Never seen it.
Jesus. Oh, okay.
Oh, I know who Michelle Forbes is.
Some bells are ringing.
I'm looking at Michelle Forbes, and she was on The Killing. Had a terrible character. Terrible character on that show. Yeah. I have nothing else to add.
I remember her most as Dr. Cox from Homicide: Life on the Street. David Duchovny, of course, is in Californication, so he apparently cannot escape that state. But yes, California. You should check it out. I think it's actually on one of the premium channels, so you know, if you're bored one day, it could possibly be on.
Are you saying
to do anything.
He can't escape from that state because he's a sex addict?
is that like just where we put them now?
No, you're saying he can't because on Californication he plays like a sex addict, so I thought...
No, like, this one is they're going to California. In Californication, he's right. Living in California. Jesus, what?
Okay. Similar titles.
Yeah.
I thought you were referencing his personal life, and I was going to say...
That would actually be speaking of similar titles, a great mashup is Californication spelled with a K, where Brad Pitt tries to kill a sex-addicted David Duchovny, who's a writer. That brings us to the end for today. Like I said, join us next week when we'll be talking about Beasts of the Southern Wild, which maybe might be more divisive, so we can finally stop fucking agreeing on everything. Danny, why don't you tell us where we can find more of your stuff on the internet?
I have a personal site, thekingbulletin.com, and twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
All right. And Nick, what of yourself?
Oh, well, all my writings are on thefilmstage.com. I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/Nick_Newman. That's all.
All right. And I, of course, have writing at dearfilm.net, my personal blog, and you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/BrianJRowan. So thank you again for joining us, and don't forget to comment and rate us on iTunes and send us an email if you have anything to say to us, which I almost am very concerned about saying now that we've said such good things about The Amazing Spider-Man.
And I should also add, rest in peace, Ernest Borgnine.
Oh,
just died. He just died today. That's a shame. He was a good actor.
Is that the third one? Because we had, okay, can we hear the thunder now? Is that
because
my whole house is shaking at the moment.
Take shelter.
Damn it, I don't even have a basement.
It's like don't a half build basement. A shelter.
And unfortunately, Jessica Chastain is not your wife.
That is kind of unfortunate, yeah.
Wouldn't that be great? You just come home.
Jessica Chastain is there.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, it'd be great.
Life wouldn't get much better than that.
Yeah, well, but then again, it seems like she plays the wife to troubled men. Because there's Tree of Life and Take Shelter, and also Coriolanus too.
Yeah.
So you've got problems. Justine is your wife.
I was about to say maybe I don't want that. I don't think I'm troubled enough, and I wouldn't want to be. Shit, this apocalyptic storm has ruined my concentration.
Yes.
Rule of threes. We had Andy Griffith. We now got Ernest Borgnine and someone else recently.
Nora,
yeah. I could have sworn there was someone else, though. I saw.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
Who gives a shit?
It matters.
Rest in peace. It's sad. We're losing seemingly a whole generation of really great artists. But hopefully a new one will rise up. We've still got Blake Lively to look forward to.
Uncalled for.
Whoa!
Leave her out of this.
I didn't realize this thing ran that deep.
I do not like Blake Lively. Did you see her in Green Lantern?
No. The only thing
absolutely
I've seen
not.
Her is The Town.
Yeah, The Town.
Yeah, but that's why I'm positive, because she was good in that movie.
Because you've only seen her in The Town.
And she's very attractive.
Go watch an episode of Gossip Girl. Go watch Green Lantern. Awful, awful movies.
She's not good in Gossip Girl? That's really surprising.
I know, right? That's an actor's show. If they can't get it out of her, who can? But yes, have a good night, and come back next week. What the hell did you just do?
I was making like
a oh dear.
Some angry Sony exec snuck into your room and tried to choke you out.
I was making a sound. I was trying to collect my thoughts, and then I had something in my throat.
Choked accidentally.
Was it a baby alien or something?
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Holy shit. Okay.
Should I just keep going?
Yeah, go for that.
Can I even keep going?